I would say that there are four challenges that we need to think about. Americans needed to figure out what their government was going to look like. They had to figure out how to deal with the massive amount of war debt that they had accrued. They needed to decide how they were going to handle foreign relations, and they needed to decide what exactly it meant to be a citizen of the United States. These are all interrelated problems that they're facing, but they kind of deal with all of them by figuring out the shape of their government and what that looks like. So, as listeners may know, in 1777, the Continental Congress adopts the Articles of Confederation. In 1781, Congress ratifies the Articles. So some states have been observing them since the 1770s, but the colonies, now states as a whole, are observing them post-1781. And under the Articles of Confederation, you have Congress consisting of a single legislative body, where representatives are chosen by the state legislatures. Each state gets one vote in Congress. So if a state's delegates divide evenly on any given issue, the state loses its vote entirely. And any amendments or changes to the articles had to be ratified by all 13 states. So there are a number of problems with the Articles of Confederation, which make American government pretty ineffective during the 1770s and 1780s. There's no ability to veto decisions because there is no executive. There's no king anymore, obviously, but there's also no president yet either. And the other big issue is that the Articles of Confederation don't have the power to raise taxes, which is a big oversight in a time of war because there's no way to raise money to pay troops. And it continues to be a problem in the 1780s after the peace is signed in 1783 because the United States is still at war with different groups of Native Americans throughout the 1780s. So the U.S. government kind of gets its act together in the spring of 1787. Representatives of 12 states gather in Philadelphia. Rhode Island is the state that refuses to take part. They agree not to print or communicate what they speak about, so it's pretty secretive. They keep the window shut because they're paranoid about being overheard, so it's Philadelphia, it's summer, they're inside with the windows cut, it's very, very hot. And it takes them some time, but eventually they come up with the Constitution, which is signed in 1787 and receives enough votes from the different states to bring it into force by 1788, although ratification continues thereafter. So under the new Constitution, the U.S. government gets an executive, a legislative, and a judicial branch. The executive provides for a president elected by the Electoral College. He serves a four-year term and has the power to grant that veto that was missing under the Articles of Confederation. And the president can also appoint ambassadors, judges, and so forth. The legislature is composed of two houses rather than just the one. So you have two senators from each state in the upper house, each of whom gets a vote, and one representative in the lower house for every 30,000 people in a state, each of whom get a vote. So each of those representatives gets a vote. So compared to the Articles of Confederation, we now have a federal government that has the power to tax, to regulate foreign commerce by treaty, and things start to move forward. So in 1789, Congress creates the Departments of War, State, and the Treasury. Henry Knox is Secretary of War, Thomas Jefferson is Secretary of State, and Alexander Hamilton is Secretary of the Treasury. But I do kind of want to point out that this is still very small-scale government. So when Thomas Jefferson arrives in New York to take over the State Department, he gets two chief clerks, two assistants, and one part-time translator, and that's it. So this is still a pretty new sort of experiment, even though there's now a formal written constitution that looks like it's capable of getting things done.